Welcome to How Stuff Works Now. I'm your host, Lauren Vogelbaum, a researcher and writer here at How Stuff Works. Every week, I'm bringing you three stories from our team about the weird and wondrous developments we've seen in science, tech, and culture. Today's episode is about how new technologies are shaping our minds and our movie spoilers. Disney might be using aerial drones to protect Star Wars filming locations from being photographed. And meanwhile, in the lab, virtual reality is helping patients treat crippling paranoia. But first, my fellow writer and researcher Christian Sager brings us news about a wearable device that claims it can help you get over your bad habits, and fast. But can a gizmo really delete your temptations by delivering electric shocks?
Everyone has bad habits they want to break. Drinking, smoking, shoplifting expensive underwear from department stores. A new product promises a supposedly quick solution, not unlike attaching a car battery clamp to yourself. Pavlok is a $199 device you wear on your wrist that shocks you with between 50 and 450 volts to create negative associations with bad habits. According to the New York Times' Jennifer Jolly, at its worst, Pavlok feels like getting stung by a bee with a stinger the size of an ice pick. Just download the app, choose your bad habit, and get zapping. The company that produces Pavlok says it takes at least 5 days to blast the bad habit out of you. Its creator, an entrepreneur named Manish Sethi, raised Pavlok funding on Indiegogo and from angel investors. He's only now planning clinical trials of the device, despite the fact that 10,000 people have already used it. So, by my math, that's $2 million he's made without any regulation or review. Let's be clear. This isn't electroconvulsive therapy like they did to that poor lady in Requiem for a Dream. No. Pavlok purports to be based on the research of Ivan Pavlov. Get it? Pavlov? Pavlok? Yeah. Anyway, Pavlov's known for ringing a bell whenever he fed his dogs. He did this so many times that the dogs began salivating just when they heard the bell. This kind of training is called classical conditioning and led to psychological theories about how it might work in us humans. But hold up. While some conditioning relies on punishment instead of rewards, Pavlok is more like aversion therapy, where a patient learns to associate discomfort with an undesirable behavior. Kind of like in Clockwork Orange, when Alex is electrocuted and given nauseating drugs so he'll associate his violent urges with sickening feelings. But what about drinking or smoking? Would Pavlok work on that? Well, some hospitals have reported success with aversion therapy, and one's even interested in using this new device. But the long-term success of aversion therapy is questionable, and its use in abusing patients is still criticized. So until Pavlok's been further studied, we don't know if it's any better than just snapping a rubber band on your wrist. Doctors recommend other long-term therapeutic options for dealing with your bad habits.
Next up, senior writer Robert Lamb reports on a study of patients who are dealing with fears that make it difficult for them to get around in public spaces. Therapy involving virtual reality proved incredibly effective.
The researchers brought in 30 people diagnosed with delusions of persecution. They each underwent a 5-minute behavioral test that forced them to engage with a real-world, high-stress social situation, like venturing to the local tube station and catching a train. Then the researchers rolled out some virtual reality cognitive therapy. They strapped them into some VR headgear and thrust them into a simulated version of the same stressful environment. They instructed some of the patients to use their normal defensive strategies, such as avoiding eye contact, while the rest were encouraged to lean into their fears, to actually approach the virtual strangers on the train and look them in their uncanny eyes. Essentially, it amounts to exposure therapy, only within the safe but immersive confines of a virtual world. Now, granted, this was a small study, and we don't have the benefit of long-term follow-up here, but the results are encouraging. Even the group that stuck to their defensive behaviors experienced some reduction in paranoia, while the rest reported greater reductions, with more than half exhibiting no severe paranoia at the end of testing. Now, don't expect the entire landscape of psychiatric care to change overnight, but this is yet another study that demonstrates virtual reality's potential as a treatment option for mental health professionals. Past studies have explored the use of VR in the treatment of addiction, PTSD, depression, and autism. Now we can add paranoia into the mix. so long as no one accidentally pops one of those Oculus Rift horror titles into the VR rig instead.
Finally today, senior writer Jonathan Strickland explains how, on the set of the new Star Wars movies, these are the drones you're looking for.
The Den of Geek website reported a while back that the production crew for Star Wars 8 had a problem with pests, specifically the robotic flying kind. While the crew was shooting in the UK, drones with cameras hovered around locations trying to capture images and video. According to Den of Geek, things were about to change as the crew prepared to move to Croatia. The movie's security force would have some new members, pilots, operating drones of their own with the mission to bring down any pesky spies. And while drone-on-drone combat can be exciting to watch, as proven by organizations like the Aerial Sport League, the question remains, is it legal if not all parties are consenting? And by it, we mean any of it. Is it legal to use drones to spy on a movie production? Is it legal for a movie crew to bring down a drone, whether with a counterattack drone or some other means? That's where we get into a pretty big mess. In the United States, the Federal Aviation Administration has been drafting rules for UAVs, but the process has been pretty slow. The FAA encourages drone hobbyists to follow community-based guidelines, which aren't law. Those guidelines typically include a section that says you're not supposed to use drones to spy on people or businesses. If the drone operator is planning on selling the images and video, then things get more complicated. That bumps the pilot from hobbyist to civil operator. To fly a drone legally as a civil operator, you first must obtain a Section 333 exemption from the FAA that allows for commercial air flight. And civil operators are legally bound to follow more rules than hobbyists. As for whether it's legal to bring down a drone, that's largely something that gets determined in individual court cases. For example, last year, William Meredith was arrested for wanton endangerment and criminal mischief for shooting down a drone flying over his property. The judge on the case dismissed all the charges. It's a mess, is what we're getting at. Technology has once again outpaced the law, and we're all left waiting to find out what happens next. Will the skies be filled with drones knocking each other to the ground? Will we need to carry drone-proof umbrellas everywhere we go? Or will the FAA take all the toys away until we prove that we're responsible enough to use them appropriately?
That's all we've got for this week. Thanks so much for tuning in. Subscribe now for more of the latest and strangest science news. And hey, send us your ideas for new stories, plus any feedback or fabulously grown-worthy dad jokes that you might have. Shoot us an email at nowpodcast@howstuffworks.com. And to access thousands of other stories like these, check out our home planet, now.howstuffworks.com.